This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Wednesday, October 7th. Soon, I'm going to be joined by Ed Harrison, and I want to learn his thoughts on the fiscal stimulus and the K-shaped recession, which may be getting worse. But first, let's go to Peter Cooper for some price action. Peter?
Thanks, Jack. Yesterday, President Trump put an end to Congress's effort to assemble a fiscal stimulus package, instructing his representatives to stop negotiating until after the election. This was announced not too long after Fed Chair Jerome Powell's appeal for a more aggressive fiscal policy response in order to not thwart the recovery that the U.S. is experiencing. He cites that there is, quote, a long way to go, end quote, in order for the economy to get back on track, and that withholding fiscal stimulus would weaken the recovery and create undue hardships for businesses and families. With fiscal stimulus negotiations being dead in the water, markets reacted very strongly. S&P 500 closed 1.4% down on the day yesterday, NASDAQ 1.6% down, and the Dow 1.3%. However, even as it seemed like Trump got up and walked away from negotiations, he tweeted later Tuesday night about Congress immediately passing aid for airlines and for the payroll protection program. He also proposed a standalone bill for another round of stimulus checks amounting to $1,200 to Americans immediately. He again put on the pressure for this specific bill this morning. It's not entirely clear what happened that made President Trump change course, whether he listened to the outcry or whether he's implementing a negotiation tactic to re-leverage the discussions in his favor. Regardless, markets heard the message right away and responded favorably. The S&P is up 1.4% today, and the NASDAQ is up 1.7%. The Dow, 1.6% as they recover some of yesterday's losses. U.S. airlines are up too after experiencing deep declines yesterday. United is up 4.6%, American Airlines 4.4%, Delta 3.2%, Spirit 3.9%, and Southwest 2.6%. Treasury yields experienced a slight decline yesterday, but have since bounced back. SPX futures dipped yesterday as well, but are also rallying again today. And the VIX also spiked on the announcement of the end of stimulus negotiations, but has been tapering off throughout the day. Interestingly enough, the VIX curves movement between Monday, as expressed by the blue line, and Tuesday, which is the orange, experienced very little movement in the futures, whereas the spot price experienced the greatest spike. Between yesterday and today, today being green, the curve fell. It's possible that the VIX futures barely moved between Monday and Tuesday, as Trump's original intent was to save a larger stimulus package for after the election, which is less than a month away. Trump changing course today for targeted immediate aid may have ultimately lowered vol altogether. Congressional Democrats have been very vocal about Trump walking away from a more comprehensive plan for fiscal support before the election, as hundreds of thousands of Americans are in dire need right now. However, we'll see how Congress responds now to his call for action, since he has flipped the negotiations on its head. And with that, I'll hand it back to you, Jack.
Thanks, Peter.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
That's really interesting on the VIX futures chart. All right, now I'm joined by Ed Harrison, Managing Editor of Real Vision. Ed, welcome to the Daily Briefing.
Well, welcome to you as well, I should say, Jack, because if I'm not mistaken, this is your first time to host the Real Vision Daily Briefing. I'm pretty excited. You know, I have a lot of energy as a result of it. I'm sure that you have some nervous energy to being in the hot seat for the first time. So I'm really excited to talk to you, Jack.
Yeah, I'm really excited, too. You know, I'm no Ash Bennington, but I'll do my best.
I'm sure you'll do great.
So I'll start out with the question, Ed, what are you looking at today in the markets?
Yeah, so actually, you know, the first thing that I was thinking about, Jack, was the fact that the markets powered forward today. I've been saying this a lot recently, that the markets want to go higher. And I think that when you just zoom out a little bit, you can think about what I was talking about in July and August, how I was saying September, October was a time frame where we're going to see more volatility, that the downside risk was there. I feel as if, you know, that beginning of September period, that was all we're going to see in terms of a correction, in terms of a down move. You know, obviously volatility still remains relatively high, but the sense that I get just from the price action is that markets do want to go higher. So we saw markets sell off to a certain degree as a result of the lack of fiscal stimulus that Donald Trump said was going to come down the pike. But now we're back off to the races again today because that's where markets want to head. And so, you know, they'll look for any positive excuse to move higher. So I feel as if, you know, we're past the point where we're going to see major downside risk, at least in the near term. None of the economic data are pointing to the economy falling out of bed. In the near term, I think you're looking 3 to 6 months down the line before you see any sort of impact from the things that we're talking about today.
That's really interesting. Ed, you wrote a piece today in Credit Write-Downs, and at the end of the piece, you struck a tone that to me struck somewhat of a contrast with what you said just now. You seem somewhat pessimistic, I don't know if that's fair to say, on the real economy. But what you're saying now is you think that the financial economy, stocks, bonds, commodities, still has some room to run just because of the animal spirits.
Yeah, so I think that the real economy impacts that I'm concerned about aren't going to happen anytime in the near future. I think if you look at where the economy is now, we're still in an acceleration phase. I think we had the V-shaped part of the acceleration that happened before. We're now moving into a lower trajectory. You know, the slope of that line is lower, and we're going to see many more negative surprises in that time, but not enough to derail the uptick that we've seen in share prices. Only at some point later down the line are we going to see whether or not stimulus is going to have a deleterious effect on the sustaining nature of the recovery. Right now, we're sort of in a what I would call inventory restocking built recovery, and that's going to take us through probably for another month or two before we start to see, you know, whether the second wave of layoffs and their negative effects are going to have a longer term impact. So, I would say that I'm relatively sanguine about the near term from a economic perspective, but I think that there are real big risks, especially as we hit the end of the year, we could get a fiscal cliff, and then as we go into the winter time in 2021.
That's really interesting. Ed, can you tell us a little bit about the data that you're seeing, the economic data? I mean, you mentioned that we're in a little bit of a restocking phase. There were some services PMIs, I think you had your finger on the pulse. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, so if you look at the PMIs that came out, the ISM, they came out earlier in the week for the non-services, and I think that the manufacturing one came out at the end of last week. It's very interesting if you take a look at some of the numbers that are in there. A lot of the numbers, you can see that it's growing. For instance, in the services PMI, we had a number that was 63 for services. And then in terms of the business activity, new orders was also up. Employment was also up. Inventories, which had gotten down really low, are starting to be restocked, not only for the services, but also for manufacturing. And in addition, I think that we're seeing some bouts of inflation on the manufacturing side, which is somewhat slowed on the services side. So all in all, what that's showing is that there is oomph going forward. The economy is moving forward, but we're seeing numbers that are, you know, overall levels that are in the low 60s, high 50s for diffusion index, which means that it's not a entirely V-shaped upward climb out of a 20 or 30 on the diffusion, 50 being the median point between, upward and downward mobility.
Right.
That's not a great number when you think about the absolute collapse that we had in March, April, May, but it's enough to keep the economy rolling over in a way that will keep asset prices supported. Moreover, I think that when you look at what Jay Powell has been saying, you know, he basically was calling for fiscal stimulus. I think that you know that you're going to get some asset price support from the Fed in the absence of fiscal stimulus, you know, what they call the monetary offset. So my view is that, financial assets are going to do well here for the near term. The economy is going to do relatively well. Coming off the basing effect over the near term, it's really as we look towards the end of the year and into 2021 that we have to have the most concern. And then, of course, I hasten to add, there's the election, which can throw a whole wrench into the whole thing.
Yeah, let's talk about the election. I know in his intro analysis, Peter showed us a very interesting chart of the VIX curve, and you could tell that there is sort of a peak forming, and it has been formed for the past 2 months or so around the election. How do you think that the various outcomes of the election are going to impact the markets? And, you know, normally if I were to ask that question under a normal year, it would be, oh, the Republicans going to win or the Democrats going to win? But I think there are a lot of extra layers in there and nuances because, you know, is it going to be decided the day after? Is the election going to be essentially a hung jury until December? What are you seeing there?
You know, I think that the pessimism associated with absolute chaos is pretty much priced into the markets at this point now. People are thinking that, bad things are going to happen. We're not going to know the outcome for a long time. I don't necessarily think that that's the case. Moreover, the status quo, which is a divided government, is actually not particularly good for the economy, as we can see when we're talking about stimulus. So let's remember that we're about to be hit by a potentially devastating wave of the coronavirus in terms of the number of infections, not necessarily in terms of the number of deaths, but it could be devastating on both levels. And we can't get ourselves ready to give any sort of relief to consumers and to small businesses. So what does that say about divided government? I think all of that's priced in to a degree. And so if you have one party that will be able to have, you know, a mandate going forward, there's much more likely to be stimulus. Even if you did have divided government after the election is over, I think the fact that there's less politics in the future and that it's now in the rearview mirror will really bring people back to, you know, we really need to get something done on the fiscal front to combat the virus. And, you know, as I'm saying all this, let me just say that one thing I saw that was very interesting earlier today, I think Fauci came out and he gave a horrific number. He said that we could have 300,000 to 400,000 deaths in the fall and winter in the United States as a result of coronavirus. I don't have anything to say about any of that because I'm not an epidemiologist, so I can't really know, you know, if that's an outlier scenario. But I think it gives you a sense of the magnitude of downside scenarios just from a public health perspective. And if you combine that with a lack of fiscal stimulus and a lack of social safety net, it does point out to me at a minimum that it's really the 3 to 6 month time frame that's where the rubber hits the road in terms of the most negative economic scenarios. So when I'm talking about the near term, I think that it's relatively good compared to that sort of medium-term outlook, which is very much affected by what happens with coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. And in your analysis, how much of a factor does another shutdown affect? If we're going to have 300,000, 500,000 new deaths, I think that the authorities would probably shut down the economy again. How would that impact the financial assets, do you think?
Yeah, so the way I'm thinking about it is I'm thinking of the K-shaped recovery, first and foremost. I think that what we're seeing is certain households, especially the richer households, certain companies like the FANG type stocks are doing really well because those are companies, those are households that are insulated from the epidemic relative to other people. Other people who have to deal with the epidemic, the worse the epidemic gets, those companies, those individuals will do worse. So that K becomes even more pronounced as a result of that. And so to me, that gives you a sense that the aggregate numbers that we're looking at don't really speak to the financial distress that's underneath the surface, that there are households and companies that are really on the cusp, the precipice. What we're seeing, for instance, in the high yield area, the Fed, they've said that they're willing to buy high yield ETFs, but are they willing to buy triple C individual companies? No, they're not. Those companies are probably going to go to the wall. If those are retail companies, are they going to be able to get a Chapter 11 bankruptcy? Maybe not. Many times what we're going to see is we're going to see liquidation. Commercial real estate. How many people are coming back into commercial real estate? Apparently in New York, only 12% of people have gone back to work, whereas 30-some percent have gone back to work in the New York suburbs. So that dichotomy gives you a sense of the problems within the commercial real estate sector in cities like New York. So what I think in terms of the virus, the impact that the virus has is that it causes consumers to act before government. That means that a shutdown doesn't necessarily have to happen for us to have the pernicious effects that I'm talking about in terms of this K-shaped recovery. If you remember, I mean, the NBER, they dated the first recession from February of 2020, not from March or April after the shutdown happened, but before the shutdown happened, we already saw, the economy lose pace. David Rosenberg was actually pointing this out today in his daily letter that February was when it happened. And so to me, that's a perfect sign of how consumers lead, government follows. So to the degree that we do get any shutdowns, those shutdowns are going to happen largely as a result of they have to happen because consumers have told the government that they're not going to go to those places.
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting. By the way, you mentioned David Rosenberg, and I had seen those reports before, but they were so long, I didn't know they were daily reports until I was prepping reports. So that actually makes it even more impressive that he does it. He is a really, really impressive guy.
Yeah, he has a team of guys. I haven't asked him about this, how he churns it out. But I mean, I think it was on Tuesday. I mean, the report that he churned out was just immense in terms of the data, on an economic basis. He was looking at daily price action in various markets like currency markets, stock market, the bond markets. Very impressive stuff that he has. I recommend his stuff to anyone very highly.
Yeah, just on the K-shaped recovery, you mentioned the credit. I'm just going to read something from an S&P Global analysis that you cited in your credit write-downs letter, that since the outbreak of the pandemic, credits at the lower end of the scale, so single B and below, have represented over half of the downgrades, while 90% of defaults were from credits in the triple C category. And that's actually something I'm seeing. I was just on Bloomberg today, and I was looking at the downgrades, and the majority of the downgrades continue to be in junk bonds. So the worst bonds, just the lowest rated bonds, keep on getting rated lower. In addition, S&P Global forecasted that the speculative grade corporate default rate would double by June 2021 from 6.2% to 12.5% in the U.S. And I found that really interesting. Tyler Neville is definitely something of a credit bull. The spread on triple C yield was actually at a 2-year low. So Tyler sent that to me, sort of bragging that he was right. And it's true. So I think there definitely is a little room for, you know, if people are projecting that defaults are going to double in a year, and the spread on triple C debt is at a 2-year low, that definitely implies that something's going on there. What do you have thoughts on that, or anything else in the credit markets?
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, one, you're pointing out to me a diffusion that is lopsided. You know, because on the one hand, you could say that you expect triple C's to default more. But what you're saying is that we're at that point in the cycle where the canary in the coal mine, the triple C's, are being downgraded a ton more. So the next move, obviously, is default, right? If you're, those are the ones that are being downgraded, then default is obviously next, because how much more can they be downgraded? Not a whole lot. So what that says to me is the canary in the coal mine, junk bonds, especially the lowest grade of junk bonds, is telling us that we're about to hit the credit cycle that we haven't hit yet in this particular cycle. The other thing that I thought that was really interesting, just on first blush about what you're saying, is I recall they're talking about a difference in the magnitude of the differential in the United States versus in Europe. The numbers that I saw for Europe were lower than they were for the United States in terms of default. And I don't know why that's the case, because I haven't seen the report, but it did stand out for me. Maybe it has something to do with the policy response, that the safety net in the United States is perceived to be more porous than it is in Europe. And maybe this whole concept of the Fed has your back really doesn't apply as much as people might think. So to me, it does point out the degree to which we have some downside risk, that the Fed can get in there, they can buy junk ETFs, they can buy single name corporates, but you know, how much are they willing to do? How far are they willing to go? I think we're about to find out at the beginning of 2021 when these defaults start happening for these names.
Yeah, I just to continue on the K-shaped recovery, another analysis that you cite in your newsletter today from Alignable, and there's a fourth quarter projection that 42% of small and medium-sized businesses might not make it to 2021. So the hiring outlook for October is flat, and 67% of small and medium-sized businesses see themselves negatively financially impacted by COVID, and only 14% see a positive impact. So what do you make of this K-shape where these small-sized businesses really have no other option? Meanwhile, the largest and most liquid and most profitable corporations in the U.S. and the world have access to, you know, a massively liquid corporate bond market that is being encouraged and stimulated by the Fed every day. Meanwhile, you know, it's very hard to stimulate activity in, you know, bank loans and and you know, issues of $50,000, $60,000, and sort of very small amounts. What do you see there, and what do you think the end game is for that?
Yeah, I mean, that is a really tough question, in the sense that you can see some pretty dark things happening there. I mean, think about it from an income inequality perspective, right? Because people have been talking about that for a long time. I think that there are a lot of people who have been saying that when you pump up asset prices because your focus on monetary policy. It means that the wealthy get wealthier, and people in the ordinary parts of the economy, they don't benefit until the later stages of the recovery. And as a result of that, you see widening gaps. That's been one of the theories that's out there. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. But what you're talking about is the same thing happening on the corporate level, right? I mean, because what we're basically saying is the Fed has your back only applies to these guys and not to these guys down here. And so as a result, you see a wide dispersion in outcomes. So when you ask the question, you know, where is this leading? My answer is it's not leading to a good place. It's leading to a place where companies like the ones you mentioned, the small businesses, they go to the wall. And when those companies go to the wall, it leaves an opening for the larger companies to take their place. They're going to mop up. They're going to expand their market share. And mm-hmm. that's pernicious in terms of their pricing power down the line. Interestingly, one thing that caught my mind earlier today is this whole thing about a bipartisan support for, watching over the fangs. I think it was Facebook, Apple, Google, and Amazon that there was a House of Representatives report, which basically said these guys have way too much power. We got to do something about it. To me, it points to regulatory action, irrespective of whether Trump wins the White House or Biden wins the White House. This whole line of argument that you have this K on the corporate side, and then simultaneously you have this regulatory action that's in the background, points to massive regulatory risk for those high flyers in on the stock market right now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really, really interesting topic. I feel like we could continue to go on, but time is running a little bit short. But first, Ed, I feel like we have to talk about your AMA that you're doing with Ash, who is I'm filling in for today. He's on vacation, but you and he are doing an Ask Me Anything Real Vision Daily Briefing on Friday, and it's going to air the following Monday for Columbus Day. So for all Real Vision members, you can post your questions for Ed and Ash in the exchange. I posted something in the Real Vision channel, so you can post it as a comment. If you can't find that and you're having trouble, you can also just post it as a comment to this video. So you can ask, Ed and Ash anything about markets, credit, crypto. You can ask about the Real Vision editorial team. You can ask. You can ask Ash, at what age did you develop your lifelong love of soccer?
I knew you were going to get that in there. That's good.
Yes. Yeah, so definitely to the people at home, definitely ask that. Ed, thank you so much for joining me, although I feel like I'm really joining you. It was a great, great time hosting you on the main segment of the Daily Briefing.
Yeah, and I hope to have you back as host many more times. Jack, it was a good inaugural spin, and thanks for talking to me.